to Marriage Beyond the Vows.
Call 855-454-5905 and get in on the conversation. We're praised.
And a very good morning to you. Welcome back. Today, we are talking about beyond faith and finances. We're talking about the state of the finances in your relationship. So we invite you to give us a call if you have questions about that. You need some guidance. This is a great time to call. 855-454-5905. Before we left you, there was a caller question. I guess the caller wanted to be anonymous, did not want to pick up the phone, and that's okay too. So Marcos is going to discuss this question here. If there are separate accounts and one does not have access to the other, what do you do if something happens to the person?
That's a great point. And actually, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Marriage Beyond the Vows. I'm your host, Marcos Mercado. And with us, we have some very special in-studio guests. We have Stephen Ampersand, who's a director of financial aid. And right before the break, we were having some great conversation about even going back to school, you know, student loans and all that good stuff. But we also have, for the second hour, we have Georgette Miller, who's an attorney and deals with finances. So welcome to our program, Georgette.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And I think this is right up your alley, right? This question, right? Perfect timing in terms of if couples don't have, you know, we do recommend for them to have, you know, not to have separate accounts, but in some cases you might have to. Mm-hmm. But what happens in the event that you have separate accounts and something happens, someone dies or they're not able to function anymore legally, what happens?
These are hard conversations to have. But, you know, I like to tell people I may not be sure that this shirt I'm wearing is blue and maybe some crazy shade of yellow, but you will close your eyes for the last time. You will die. So you must be prepared for it. So for those of you who out there who don't have wills, shame on you. Mm. You need to go to Staples and pick up a $50 will kit, fill it out, get it notarized. And there's also something called a healthcare proxy. That's in addition to a will, meaning that if you become incapacitated, you know, you have someone, something on paper saying this person can speak on my behalf. So if you have separate accounts, that's fine. But make sure you have, both of you have some kind of will.
So what if you don't have that? So let's say someone has thousands of dollars in the bank. But what happens legally if, say, for example, you have a couple who are legally married, but they have separate accounts and one passes away?
You don't automatically have access to that money.
That's good. So, you know, you probably need to say that louder because I think people...
You don't automatically have access to that money. You may have a legal right to it, but because the person died intestate without a will, now the municipality has to raise an estate on that person's behalf and basically be the executor, for which they need to be paid. All of that could be avoided if someone went to Staples and got a will kit for $50 and filled it out.
Wow. That's really interesting because a lot of times people don't understand their rights and they just think, you know, for lack of better word, it's just they're ill-prepared.
For a lack of knowledge, people always perish. Mm. And they're saying, oh, well, I'm legally married to the person, so I'm entitled to that money. Yes, you're entitled to that money, but there are legal procedures that must be adhered to before you get that money. And the legal procedure is an estate needs to be raised, of which an executor needs to be appointed.
Sure.
And if you don't have a will, the city or state or municipality is going to do that on behalf. And what we know, they ain't doing it for free.
And they're not going to do it in your best interest either.
Well, they may do it in your best interest, but they're not going to do it for free. They're going to take a cut of the whole estate as payment, all of which could be avoided if you went to Staples and got a will kit for $50.
So in short, take care of it now while you still can.
Life is short. If you don't have a plan to fail, and your life is a business, treat it like a business. Make sure you have those things in place.
Wow, excellent. Awesome.
One of the things I would add, too, and outstanding advice. I mean, you know, sometimes you may feel like, well, I'm not savvy enough to fill out a will form or what have you. There are other avenues you could do that. Obviously, you could get with counsel to do that. You could use a site like LegalZoom or LegalForms.com. These are all legitimate organizations and certainly lawyers that can help you to do that so that you're not making any mistakes. But to live without one, it's you're planning to fail.
Yeah, you're courting with disaster.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, we're going to have more conversation about this stuff, but this is a perfect opportunity to go ahead and call in. We have our in-studio guest. We have an attorney, Georgette Miller, who deals with finances all the time. Bankruptcy, I love what she just said, treat your marriage like a business because you have to protect it. And also, we have Stephen Ampersand, who's a director of financial aid. So if you have any questions about going back to school, trying to, you know, get your education with minimal to no loans, all that good stuff. Great opportunity to call in.
And the number is 855-454-5905.
So, Georgette, let's ask you this question. If what are some of the greatest challenges that couples have when they come to you?
Okay, when people come to my office, they're usually on the brink of what they consider to be a financial Armageddon. And what typically happens is you went into the marriage and one person possibly had really good credit and one person did not. And now one person is possibly loaded up with a lot of debt and the and one spouse isn't. But they're both struggling. Listen, I don't care how, and I'm going to keep it real because that's just how I speak. You will have a couple come in and they're both making, between the two of them, they make $100,000. But here's the story. They have a mortgage of $2,800. They have two car notes of $500 a piece. They have two kids. And we know kids, they're expensive.
Sure.
So
I know.
After they pay their mortgage, their two car note, pay for the food and the utilities to keep the $500 utilities because they have a 2,300 square foot home. At the end of the day, when they get their paycheck, they literally have to pay Mary, Jose, and the 12 disciples. If you're in that position, guess what? You broke.
And you know
I don't care how much you're making, you are broke.
And they're living beyond their means.
And they're living way beyond their means. So when they come into my office, I have to sit them down and have what I like to call your come to Jesus moment.
Right.
Where you look at all your expenses and you say, oh, wait a minute, I really am broke. I need to shed some of this debt. I am, in business terms, over leveraged. So we get them in. We get them, we file a Chapter 7 or a 13. Sometimes they're behind on their mortgage. We restructure it, and we get them back on a better financial path. But that's the easy part.
Sure.
Getting out of debt is the easiest part ever. Then I have to sit them down and say, listen, now that I got you out of debt, here's where the work comes in. Staying out of debt is where the real work comes in.
Sure. Because they got there somehow, right? It's going to happen. The patterns are still there.
It and I said, you know, staying out of debt is real simple. If you can't wait for it, save for it, and pay for it in cash, guess what? You can't afford it.
That's good.
Period.
I agree. I totally agree with you.
For those of you who have $500, let's do the math. $500 car note, because everybody's car note is about $500. If you have a $500 car note, that also means that you buy a good car, so you need good gas. You're going to pay $250 for gas every month. You have to put full coverage on it. So yeah, that's another $250 for car insurance. So what's that? That's $1,000 a month on a car before you eat. And if you pay for that car over 5 years, that's $30,000. And at the end of the 5 years, the car is worth what? $7,000. So what have you done? Robbed your retirement $23,000 in principal. And a dollar is not just a dollar today. A dollar is also the interest that could accrue to you over your lifetime if you have not spent that dollar.
You're preaching. Now, a couple of things that we're going to touch on because we're gearing up for a break. So we have a caller that actually has questions about prenup agreements. We also have questions about finances. I mean, these are some good conversations. We don't want you to wait till it's, you know, later in the show and we're about to wrap it up. So this is a perfect opportunity for you to call in and get on the queue so that we can, you know, get to your phone call.
That's right. All you have to do is call us at 855-454-5905. Let's start with Gary calling in from New Jersey. Gary, good morning. You're live on the air.
Hi, how you doing this morning?
We're doing excellent. We're having a good conversation about finances. What is your comment or question for us this morning?
Well, you know, I actually was a victim of the divorce, downsides of going downhill. Okay. And, you know, suffered major financial losses and whatnot in excess of almost $100,000, which, you know, I had to end up filing bankruptcy and finally getting myself back on track and everything. You know, I'm in a good position now. I actually own my own real estate company now. So, you know, things are, you know, definitely looking up. But one thing I wanted to say is that, you know, I ran into a situation where, you know, through the divorce and everything, my credit took a major, major drop and dropped to under 600 credit score. And right now I'm sitting at 693 because of an organization I got involved with. I don't know if I could give the name of that organization, but it really helped me out in getting all of my financials back in order, not just my credit, but putting together a living will, power of a trust.
Well, let me ask you this. Is the organization a nonprofit?
No.
All right, so then don't mention it because we want to make sure we don't promote it. But I know there are many organizations out there. I think that probably the biggest thing you did, Gary, though, is you humbled out and you got help. Mm-hmm. You didn't figure this out on yourself. You said, listen, I've gotten myself in a mess, you know, with the divorce, with everything else, and I just need some input. I need some help, which is what Georgette and Steven do all the time, is just help others. And it's hard to be objective when it's you. And so someone else could come in and say, listen, what are you doing? I love what Georgette just said, even about the car. You might be driving this nice car, but do you realize how expensive this car is? And you're really literally throwing money out the window. Dave Ramsey says it's one thing, is that when you have this car payment, you might as well just lower your window and start throwing $100 bills out the window. Literally, just do it, because that's what you're doing while you're driving this car. And so I think what you did, you know, I want to commend you for that, is you're heading on the right path, because you humbled out and you said, listen, my credit is really messed up. My life is really messed up. I got to pick up the pieces. Let me get some input. What do you guys think?
Well, the first thing you did is you exercised your right under the bankruptcy code to get a fresh start, which is what it is there for.
Mm. We're going to have to, Gary, take a quick break. We're going to continue this conversation and some others as well who have questions here. But just hold on. We just have to take a brief break and we'll be right back.
That's right. So stay right there. We encourage anyone else who has a question about their finances in their relationship to get on the phone. Give us a call, 855-454-5905. Marriage Beyond the Vows returns after this. Call 855-454-5905 and get in on the conversation. We're praised. And we're back in the final segment of today's edition of Marriage Beyond the Vows. Again, the phone number to reach us is 855-454-5905. Before the break, we were in the midst of a conversation with Gary from New Jersey, so we're going to return. Gary, are you there? Hey, okay. Gary, are you there?
Yep, I'm still here. Thank
you so much for your patience. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Marriage Beyond the Vows. I'm your host, Marcos Mercado. We have Tiffany Bacon, our co-host, and we also have our two very special, awesome in-studio guests, attorney Georgette Miller and director of financial aid at Cecil College, Stephen Ampersand. And Gary, we were having this great conversation about the help that you got, right? You went through a divorce. You were like $100,000 in debt, and now you're really getting back on your feet. Because you got some outside help, and I think Georgette Miller, you were in the middle of a sentence.
I was saying that you file bankruptcy and you recognize that, you know, you exercise your legal right to get out of that debt, and then you took the steps afterwards to build your life over, which is easy, which as you see is not easy, but it's very doable.
Right.
Now
absolutely.
Now you need to, and I'm sure you are, live your life in such a way that you never go back. Right? You're not Lot's wife. You're not looking behind. You're not going back. And you are taking the steps, I'm assuming, of now living below your means always, saving and investing the difference, using cash when possible, and all that good stuff, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So what is the lesson that you've learned?
The one good thing I'm gonna say, and I know you got other people want to call, and I'm gonna just say what I need to say real quick and get off the line, is I went through a phase where I had to get my spiritual mind back intact, because basically I was living outside of God's will, and I see that a lot of things that were happening to me at one point was I wasn't living right. And when I got my spiritual life back in order, everything else started lining up as well. So, the one thing that hit me was I was listening to Les Brown one day, and something he said, that really struck a nerve, and it helped me to see the light. And what he said was, if the people in your life can't help lift you up, for God's sake, don't let them pull you down. Mm. And that just, it just penetrated my soul so much that I just seen where the things that were going on in my life was because I wasn't living right, and I was living with negative energy draining people.
That's good.
That just could not happen anymore. And I had to ask God for a spiritual downsizing, because I felt it was so difficult for me to walk away on my own, and I just couldn't do it on my own. God had to intervene and pull those people out of my life.
Wow,
and that, I did not look back.
Thank you, Gary. And we appreciate you sharing that. I always like to put scriptures to what we say, and I appreciate what Les Brown shared. But 1 Corinthians 13, it says, bad company corrupts good character.
Absolutely.
Who you surround yourself with is going to make a difference. So
absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that, and we do appreciate you calling in.
All right. God bless.
All right.
God bless
care.
You, too.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to New Jersey and speak with Jane, who's calling in on line 3. Jane, good morning. You're live on the air.
Good morning, Jane.
I've been married for about 22 years now, and I've been out of work for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the last 7 years, I have autoimmune disease, which stopped me from working, period. And the last couple of years, my husband stopped all his money from going to the bank. He does not pay any mortgage. He does not buy any food. He won't help take me to the doctors or anything. And I am so fed up. I just want to leave. And I told him I wanted to sell the house. He said if he gets half of it, I can sell. It's his house. And which the money came out of my retirement fund.
So let me get this straight. He's working. You can't work. But now he's not contributing at all. But he's still living in the house?
Yes, he is. He would pay the utility bills, but I have to pay the largest part of that, which is the mortgage.
Okay.
And I have no money left after my benefits, SSI. And anything I do, I have to pay him to take me to the doctors, to the grocery stores, or anything.
You have to pay him to take you? Okay, well.
Yes, my husband.
Let's go back a little. Now, this is not recent. You've been married 22 years.
It's been recent. It's been going on for the last couple of years, but we have been in a bad situation where there's no sex, staying in the same room for 20 years.
Mm, okay. So this is a deeper issue. This is not necessarily a financial issue. This is a relationship issue as a couple. You're really not a married couple now. You're married legally, and you're living under the same roof, but you're living two separate lives.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, Georgia, she has a puzzled look, so I'm trying to figure out what she's going to say.
No, are you guys going to divorce so that you can both move on with your lives?
I want to sell the house and move on with my life. Right now, I don't have money to do anything except for pay the mortgage.
Okay, well, you want to consult a divorce attorney or something like that? Or you guys need to separate, because you need to move on with your lives. So you can't continue living this way. You do understand that.
Yes.
Something has to give. And,
yes.
and I think.
And each year it gets worse.
Okay. Well, a couple of things. First of all, let's bring it to the spiritual. Okay, hold on. Let me just bring it to the spiritual for a moment. Are you Christians, both of you?
I am. And I asked him to please take me to church, because I miss going to church. I can't even get out the house. I can't walk.
Okay.
And he said he had dropped me off. I said, but I need someone to help me, you know, get inside or whatever.
All right, so he's not spiritually, he's not even trying to live right. Okay, so he's not trying to live right. So you're unequally yoked on multiple levels. I think, yes. You know, this is definitely a spiritual issue, and it's time, and what Georgette said is really good. You're going to have to get some legal counsel, but you're also going to have to get some spiritual counseling. And saying, listen, what are we going to do with our lives? Because it's not sustainable. You can't keep living this way and him living this way. So as two adults, you got to make some decisions.
He won't even talk to me.
Well, that's not an option, though, because you're paying the mortgage. He's living there. He's taking care of some bills. But it's not sustainable. I mean, you're going to be bitter. It's just not a good situation. So if he won't talk to you. Yeah, no, this is not good. Now, is he willing to sit down and get some counseling?
We tried that, and he sit there like a not on a log, not saying anything. I just gave up.
Okay, but you're still paying the bills.
The mortgage, yes, until I sell the house.
Yeah, I would say at this point, you know, it sounds like you're going your separate ways, and what Georgette's, suggested is you need to get some legal advice.
Yeah, you need to move on because, I mean, in action, you have the rest of your life to look forward to. And in action is not an option. I mean, you're doing nothing when it comes to your life is not a viable option. Your life is worth more than that.
Yes, it is.
And I love what the previous caller shared. And they said, listen, I had to move on and surround myself with some people that were going to bring me up and not pull me down. It sounds like right now, at least from your side of the story, right? We don't know his side, but it sounds like he's pulling you down. I mean, at a time when you already are down because you have, you know, some disability challenges you're dealing with, you need him to support you and encourage you through this, not bring you further, you know, and further into the hole.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, listen, we'll be praying. And I tell you one thing that I would love to hear is what steps you will take to make sure that you don't stay in the same situation.
Person, a lawyer or someone, and just sell the house and just move
on. Well, Georgette, how can they get in contact with you? I know you're an attorney.
You can call my office at 866-964-6529. And when you speak to the receptionist, just ask her for the divorce attorney we work with. That's the first place you want to start with. You want to sit down with a divorce attorney who will sit down and tell you what your rights are legally and how you can go about, you know, moving on with your life.
Number again, Georgia?
866-964-6529.
Okay. And let me say one more thing here, because, you know, we're not advocating divorce, but if your marriage is over, sometimes let me tell you what can happen, and I tell people never lose faith, but you got to make some action, some decisions. This could be a great wake-up call, and if your husband decides, well, I don't want to get divorced, I want to save our marriage, then he'll be willing to do whatever it takes. But the way he's acting now, it's like he doesn't want the marriage. So I would move forward and speak to this attorney.
Thank you.
Okay.
God bless. Thank you so much. Please call us back, you know, in the not too far distant future and let us know what happened with the steps that you took.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. Let's come back to Pennsylvania and speak with Mary calling in on line 2. Mary, good morning. You're live on the air.
Yeah, thank you for having me. My question is, we had a problem. My husband, I got a home a few years ago, but my husband's name was on the loan, is on the loan. My name was technically not on the loan. But the accounts went bad. We decided to apply for modification.
Okay.
And all of the paperwork, and my husband made me to sign where they have co-borrow. But not knowing we signed it or the ignorant, I signed it and we did it. Modification, but then the modification is not doing any good for us because his income and my little income is like so hard. And so they are saying that we make a lot of money, so we have to they just dropped $100 from the less than $100, $95 from the original amount we were paying. So it's like I don't know what to do. And he said, when I look at the whole document, I'm like, I'm not a borrower. I did not borrow this money. You on the loan. He said, but we have you signed all the paper. I said, you make me to sign the paper so that they need some both of us income. And
Okay, so are you separated right now? Are you together or separated?
Yeah, we're all together.
Okay, so you're together, but you're saying that you had an initial loan that your name wasn't on it, but now it is after you modified.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you say, Jordan?
Well, yeah, you're now a co-borrower. You're now joint and severally liable. So you're both liable for the debt going forward based on the loan modification documents. So if you want to stay in the home, you have to continue paying for it. If you intend to leave, then there are other options available. But if you want to stay there, you're going to have to pay that mortgage.
No, my problem here, we are together and we want to keep the home.
Mm-hmm.
We want to keep the home, but because of our income, they are saying that they cannot drop the rate. The rate is still the same.
Yes, but the bank doesn't have to help you. When you borrow, when you go to a bank and you borrow $100 for them for their mortgage to buy your home, you signed a note or your husband signed a note saying that for the next 30 years, you're going to pay $10 a month for the next 30 years. Mm. With a modification, you're coming back and saying, well, can I pay you $8 instead? The bank always has the right to say no. So when you ask for the modification to begin with, they absolutely within their right could say no. They have no obligation to help you. They can if it makes sense for them, but they have no obligation to help you. So you telling them that they need to drop the interest rate is like talking to the wall. They don't have to.
Yeah. And you have to fulfill your end of the bargain now.
Right.
You can't like renegotiate it unless they're willing. But
unless
if they're not willing, then there's nothing you can do. Unless you lose your house.
If you're willing to walk away, then we can have another conversation. But if you want to stay there, you have to pay based on the terms that you both agree to.
No, we don't want to walk away.
Okay.
But he's thinking about taking me off the loan.
Taking you off?
The bank doesn't have to take you off the loan either if they don't want to. The only way you get taken off the loan is if your husband goes out and get a new mortgage in just his name.
Oh, okay. Now I understand.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Right. Bye-bye.
No problem.
And you know, let me add another component as well. You know, if you can't afford the initial terms, don't agree to something.
Oh, no.
Especially if you're a Christian, you got to keep your word. Like sometimes people, you know, even bankruptcy, it's within your legal rights. But also, you know, are you being responsible before God?
There's
you know, what are you able to do? There's a moral obligation as well.
Well, I always take issue with that based on this. The book of Deuteronomy 15, verse 4, talks about the year of Jubilee.
Yes.
Where once every 7 years, creditors had to release their debtors from their debts. And that was from the time of the Torah, from the time of Moses. Bankruptcy is the same concept. It's just once every 8 years. It's where the federal government says to you, look, instead of your completely financial life crashing to the ground and you becoming our problem, we're going to relieve you of this debt so that you can move forward.
But
and
you know that scripture, hold on one second, let me interject. It also talks about you not being the person that tries to get in that predicament a month before Jubilee.
You can't do that in bankruptcy. You can't just run up your credit cards.
But
and then
what I'm saying, though, is like in this case, right, they agreed to some terms on a mortgage, and then they're like, oh, we really can't hold on to that, but we want to keep the house. Like, at some point, you have a moral obligation to say, listen, I'm signing this contract, whether it's bankruptcy or not, what are you able to do? Because I think something we were talking about earlier, Georgia, is what happens when someone does file bankruptcy and then they don't change their spending habits. And so I think there's something bigger here. It's not just
people really need to live within their means, period. And that is just basic.
Mm-hmm.
People need to go to the point where if you cannot write a check for something, you really want to stop and think about whether or not you can afford it.
And that's what we're saying.
If you are borrowing to get it, then you need to stop and say, well, I'm borrowing to get this thing. One, is it a depreciating asset? Maybe I shouldn't get it. If it's an appreciating asset, can I truly afford the borrowing get it?
That's good. That's a great point.
And simply because someone, a real estate broker or whoever tells you that you can afford this, doesn't necessarily mean you can afford it.
Absolutely. Now, well, let's continue on here with a phone call. We have Courtney, who actually has a question about bankruptcy. So this is a perfect right up our alley as we're having this discussion.
Yes, let's go to Courtney on line one. Courtney, are you there?
Yes. Good morning. How
good
you
morning.
Doing?
Good.
So what is your comment or question for us this morning?
My question real quick is, me and my wife, we have put our kids through college or in college. They're still in. And with that is it put us to be extremely in debt.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were to try to file bankruptcy, but yet I have a retirement plan, would I be able to file bankruptcy or I would be forced to use my retirement?
No, your retirement is 100% protected in bankruptcy. As a matter of fact, I filed bankruptcies for people. Many of them are very savvy and they have $1 million in their retirement account. Mm-hmm. The bankruptcy court treats your retirement accounts as sacrosanct. It's judgment proof. Nobody can touch it.
Now, how else would this affect them? Would it affect their children, their loans?
No, actually, if you file bankruptcy under the bankruptcy code, they cannot be denied federal student loans based on filing bankruptcy. They have that protection in the bankruptcy court. So if you want to continue to fill out your FAFSA, you're entitled to do so.
You absolutely should. But let me warn everybody who's listening. You cannot charge off
student loans
in a bankruptcy.
Right.
And so what we're seeing in this nation now, credit card debt used to be the largest. We are now upwards of $1 trillion in student loan debt, and you cannot charge it off. The only way you can be released of it is if you have a catastrophic disability that can be documented or you die. Okay, and so...
And if you die and you have your joint borrower is liable.
Correct. Also around Parent PLUS loans. You know, Parent PLUS loans seem like a really good idea until, as a parent, you realize that you're 10, 20 years away from retirement and you now owe $100,000 of loans for your child's education. They don't put that on the child. They put that on you because it's your loan. So we have to be wise about some of these things. So bankruptcy is a viable solution if... You find yourself in a situation where truly you're going into catastrophic failure, but understand that you will not be able to charge off the student loan piece. That's something that will stay with you, and they have the power and authority to garnish wages, to seize assets and liens. You need to be very deliberate about your use of student loans with that understanding.
Right. I call student loans the original gangsters. And the reason I call them the original gangsters is because I can file a bankruptcy and get rid of debt that's owed to the I, the R, and the S, as long as it's more than 3 years old. But I cannot get rid of student loans unless you've been declared legally disabled.
Wow. Or die.
Or die.
Now, can I ask you one other question?
Sure, quickly.
Real quick. Is it possible where me and my wife, we do not have good credit?
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, we... more or less pay for our kids to go through college. Is it a way where a daughter that's in college can apply for her own loans?
How old is she?
How old is she? She's 21.
She's 21. Okay, the Department of Education considers students dependent students until the age of 24, unless they meet a few exceptions. They are either married themselves, they are veterans of the U.S. Armed Forces, they are a parent of a child of their own that they can demonstrate that they pay 51% or more of their care. You could be a ward of the state. There are several exceptions, but for the most part, unless you're age 24. Now, can she borrow her own loans? Yes. There are subsidized loans and there are unsubsidized loans, and the level that she can borrow, you know, change from year to year based on her progress through college. So much as a freshman, so much as a sophomore, senior, and so on. But in most cases, where you're going to school makes all the difference. If you're going to a school that costs $40,000 a year and her maximum eligibility between sub and unsub ends up to be $5,500 as a freshman for that year, that means your household has to come up with the other $35,000, you know, to pay for the tuition and fees at that school. So we have to be deliberate as parents and as students. We need to figure out, okay, how much can we afford? What school can we go to and pay for? I don't know if your daughter's working, but I highly encourage that college students at least have a part-time job. All the studies show that students who are working part-time and going to school have better grades. They graduate earlier. And that's critical when you're thinking about how much you're paying year to year. Consider this. The national average graduate, it takes 6 years to get a bachelor's degree. That's national average. Okay, so even if your daughter is above average, it's probably going to be a little bit more than four. So you just want to make those wise decisions as you're considering where they go and how we're going to fund it.
Great. Well, Gary, hopefully these solutions, these answers have helped you in making your decision with your household.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's Courtney. Right. Courtney, thank you. God bless.
All right. Take care. All right. Looks like we have a question from a caller about prenups. One person is asking for Should you get a prenup before house purchase? Is that what the question is?
Are you already married?
That's no, the good, person's not on the line.
That's a good question. Well, if they're married, a prenup is before you marry, just so you know that.
Right.
Now, you're talking about should they have some kind of contractual. Well, let's discuss both, right? If you're not yet married, would it even be wise to try to purchase a property together? I from a spiritual standpoint, I wouldn't advise it. And then secondly, if they're already married, is there some kind of contract they can go into?
You can go into a contract. I forgot the name of it, but it's very difficult to create because you've already gotten married.
Sure.
I think that's something, if you're considering a prenup, that's something you want to do prior to marriage, where everybody comes to an agreement, say, in the unlikely event this falls apart, you know, if, when we walk away, everybody's going to walk away with X or Y. So yeah. Prenups are really a conversation you want to have with your spouse prior to taking the vows. Afterwards, it becomes, from every family law lawyer I've spoken to, it becomes a pretty much a nightmare.
Yeah. And, you know, there are, and I would say rare cases where you might need a prenup, but believe me, if you already are wondering and preparing for failure when it comes to the marriage, then you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really should proceed with caution. However, there are rare exceptions where you might really have to say, well, we need to protect ourselves.
Right. You may have kids from another
blended family.
Yeah, blended family.
And you want to protect your children to make sure
that's different.
That
and that's,
when you come together, your children get your assets if you're really, really, you know, determined
great.
To do that.
We have another question here from a caller. We have several of these, but this one is, you know, if you don't have a lot invested, you don't have a lot of property or you know, just even capital, do you still need a will?
Absolutely.
And can you explain why? I know, I believe you, and trust me, I think that's a great idea, but why?
Because, again, if you pass away and you don't have a lot, you have clothes, you have furniture, you may have worked somewhere and had be entitled to a pension somewhere.
Sure.
You have something. If you have a pen, it's something. That pen cannot transfer to your heirs unless someone has raised an estate. And the only way to raise an estate is two ways. Either you have a will that determines how the pen moves, or the city of Philadelphia or wherever is going to raise that estate on behalf of you, and they're not going to just give the pen to your heirs. They may take out the ink and then give the pen. Mm-hmm. You want to protect the ink. You want the asset to go intact to your heirs.
And it might be something, and it could be, you know, something that might be even of emotional value that you want to give to someone.
How you want to be buried? I said, in order for me to be buried, I want to be cremated. I want my ashes taken back to Jamaica and put in the sea that I used to go to as a child.
Mm.
That's all detailed in my will because that's what.
And then
I
it
want.
Has to happen.
And it has to happen
instead of someone else making the decision. Nah, it's not that important.
Exactly.
She won't know. She ain't here anymore.
Exactly.
Well, it's about loving your family well. Also, you may not have a lot. But the last thing you want to leave your family with is the obligation to figure out what would mom or dad have wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've got siblings involved, well, I think it would have been this and I would have been that. Love your family well enough to give them the plan so that when they're grieving your loss,
they don't have to worry about
these details as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. It's so important. I think everybody needs it because really, I think when we think about wills, we're not always educated because we think, oh, you must have a big estate and you must have all this money. But it's like, no, it's what's your will?
It's your desire.
Your will and testament.
Exactly. When you close your eyes for the last time, what do you want to happen?
Mm, wow. Awesome. Awesome. I love that. Let's continue on here with our phone calls.
Yes. We have T calling in from Pennsylvania. T, good morning. You're live on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was calling in reference to my situation. I've been married to this man for 34 years, but out of the blue just decides that he doesn't want to be married any longer and that he thinks he'd be happier by himself. So after going through that shocking thing that we met and he didn't want to go through his divorce, didn't want to go through counseling or anything, but he said that he would continue with the mortgage, continue with my car note insurance if I continue everything else, which I kept my part up even though I'm on disability. However, to come to find out that he didn't do his part, I was served a foreclosure notice, and my car was repossessed. And so I've been trying to get a home modification loan and fighting it. in court for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. I'm that far behind because I can't catch up now because he didn't pay for 8 months and I didn't even know. Because I never opened up the bills. I never opened up anything addressed to him. That's how I always been. So since I was closed with the foreclosure, my car was possessed. I didn't know what was going on. I trusted him to do that part because I kept up my part. So I'm still fighting for 2 years now in court about the house. Another day he came and gave me papers that he was filed for divorce, and he wants me to file for no fault, even though he was in an adulterous situation, and also he abandoned me on my sick bed and abandoned responsibilities. So I don't know if I should, if it's too late to file for Chapter 13 to save my house. Or
well, in your situation, you can file a Chapter 13, but I don't know if it would be economically feasible for you to do so. Because for 13, you have to go back to paying the regular mortgage payment, whatever that is, and the payments that you're behind, you have 5 years to catch up. If that's economically feasible for you, that's fine. You can do it. You will strip away the credit, you know, the credit card, the repo. Then you're looking at facing, you need to file a Chapter 7 and eventually walk away, period, and start again.
So even though my house doesn't have a lot of equity in there, so you think that being stressed out about it, I should just walk away from it.
Well, you could go then if it has a lot of equity, you want to sell the property and get the cash out as quickly as possible.
I had it on the market for sale, and then once I was going to court, they must have found it. I didn't know you couldn't have it on the market for sale when you're going through a home modification, so the court made me take it off the market.
That's not true.
Well, they made me take it off the market. I had to take it off the market out the relative's hand because they said I couldn't sell it, being selling if they was considering giving me a modification loan. So that's why I took it off the market. And
well, now they're not. Now you need to put that behind you. Put the house on the market so you can get the cash out, hopefully quickly. And once you've cashed out, you can, you know, afterwards you can come give us a call and see if we can do a Chapter 7 to get rid of the rest of the debt, because you still have the repo debt sitting out there.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to deal with it, or they will come and take your stuff.
Yes. Now, also, when he gave me the papers the other day, he has on the stipulation that he wants me to agree with his terms, and that is
you need representation.
You need a divorce attorney.
Okay.
You need representation. Georgette, give out your office number.
866-964-6529.
I'm sorry. Can I call back and get that number? Because I don't have an ink pen on
You know what it is? Go to praisephilly.com. We're going to have it. We'll have it there, all the information on our website.
Okay.
Look for Marriage Beyond the Wild. Praisephilly.com.
Okay, I thank you and appreciate it.
All right, God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
All right, well, we're almost at the tail end of our program here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's with a heavy heart that, you know, I think so many people, out of ignorance or they're not really prepared, and I think a lot of times, because, you know, we feel like we should be very passive when we're Christians, that we don't prepare ourselves or equip ourselves, whether it's with a will, whether it's with an attorney, even when it comes to school. Like, we almost think, all right, this is what we need to do, instead of really asking the right questions. So I think today's program was very beneficial for so many. You can also go back and listen to the previous hour if you're just tuning in. You can go to praisephilly.com. We'll have that up.
For having me, what I would say is, you know, be wise, be shrewd, and get as much input as you can.
Absolutely.
I would say, you know, your life is really a business. You know, unfortunately for that last caller, she put our life on automatic pilot.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that. You are the CFO, CEO, and COO of your own lives.
Yes.
And you need to treat your life like a business with the same respect that you would treat going to work and doing someone else's business. You need to make yourself a priority, treat your life like a business, and make sure you have all your ducks in a row. Also, live within your means.
Yes.
Always.
Below your means, right? So you can have extra.
Below your means and save and invest the difference.
Awesome. And, you know, I want to close out and give this scripture. Matthew chapter 10, verse 16 says, "Therefore, be as shrewd as snakes and innocent as doves." So we got to remember, we still need to be innocent, but let's not throw the shrewdness out the window. And
right.
That means with being, you know, educated. I know this is probably even another conversation. Steve, who's a director of financial aid, there are literally millions of dollars that people don't use that they can in scholarships.
Absolutely
and,
true.
And grants.
But you know what? The scholarship monies are monies that you got to go get. You got to do applications. You got to fill out essays. It's work. But you can get so much money, it's left on the table every year because people don't want to do the hard work. They would rather sign up for a loan that's easy, that schools are more than willing to give you because it's easy money for them too. It's not necessarily in your best interest to do that. Take the time, do those applications, start early, go to the seminars that are offered in the high schools, at the colleges, go find out what you need to know so that you can be equipped to make a good decision. Do your applications early so that you can make an informed decision versus having to take the very first thing that's coming.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Stephen and Georgette Miller. Thank you so much. If you want more information on how to reach these two individuals and get more information, go to our website, praisephilly.com. Look for me, Marcos Mercado, of Marriage Beyond the Vows. And you can always tune in next week where we'll be right back, right?
That's right. So make sure you check us out. We thank you so much for listening today. Much love going out to our producer. I'm so used for the previous show. Our producer, Larry. Thank you for all that you do. Have a peaceful, positive, and productive week. And we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.